Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Democrats in the New York State Legislature this week released counterproposals to Governor Kathy Hochul's budget. The Assembly and Senate want to restore reductions to school aid, embark on an ambitious affordable housing program, and raise taxes on the wealthy. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
The Senate and Assembly budgets would add $1.2 billion to schools and end Governor Hochul's plan to make changes in the way school aid is distributed. Hochul wants to eliminate what's known as Hold Harmless, a provision that says no school district can receive less money than it did the previous year. Her plan would result in about half of the state's school districts getting less money than they did last year.
So good afternoon, everyone.
Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins at a news conference says she agrees with the governor that the method for distributing school monies, known as foundation aid, needs to be updated. But she says simply changing one part of the formula, like ending Hold Harmless, doesn't make sense and is unfair to the schools.
Things need to be updated. And when you just take one piece of an outdated formula and not the whole piece, you don't always get the results that you want.
The Senate and Assembly want to fund a $1 million study that the State Education Department would conduct. The goal would be to identify ways to update the formula, which partly relies on data from the year 2000 and was last revised in 2007. Both houses are also proposing an affordable housing plan. Part of it would model a new initiative on the mid-20th century Mitchell-Lama program. The plan would also renew a tax break for developers who include affordable housing in their projects and include a goal of stronger tenant protections. The Senate and Assembly also want to raise taxes on individual New Yorkers and businesses whose annual income is more than $5 million. An additional tax surcharge would be levied on those earning more than $25 million a year. Senate Finance Committee Chair Liz Krueger says the increases would give New York $1.1 billion more dollars in tax revenue.
It's a very small number of New Yorkers, and frankly, the amount of tax difference for them when they hold it up on their overall income and their tax base will not be significant for any of them either, because we are talking about the 1% of the 1%.
Hochul pushed back on some of the legislature's plans. She defended her cuts to school, saying they follow 2 years of record spending on school districts and that enrollment is dropping. Hochul panned the legislature's idea for a commission to reexamine how school aid is distributed.
That is how you would define kicking a can down the road.
Hochul says she's open to the ideas on housing, but she says she hadn't heard of the initiative that lawmakers are calling Mitchell-Lama 2.0 until Monday evening. She says she's willing to study it, saying that the state desperately needs more housing.
Walking away from this session without doing something on building more housing will not be acceptable to me.
The governor called the proposal to raise taxes on the wealthy and businesses a non-starter. Hochul says she believes the budget can be finished, mostly, before the Easter holidays begin on March 29th. She says she's open to agreeing on an outline of the budget and then coming back after the holiday to approve the bills.
If we can get to agreements, get this settled, even if it's a handshake before and then come back later and pass it the following week, that's all on the table.
But Hochul says there are no guarantees that will happen. The budget is due April 1st. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with Corinne Carey, Senior Campaign Director for Compassion and Choices. I began by asking Corinne about medical aid in dying legislation.
10 states plus Washington, D.C. have adopted laws that allow terminally ill individuals to ask their doctor for a prescription that they can take at a time of their choosing, or never, should their suffering become too great to bear and to die peacefully with those that they love around them.
How would you compare your fight in New York to your fight in New Jersey so far? Obviously, it's in the legislature right now. We have supermajorities of Democrats. So if the Democrats are in favor, and of course the governor, you would think that it'd be a good chance that 9.5 years in, you might have a law after the session. But give us a sense of what it's like comparatively to fighting it in New Jersey, a next door state to New York.
Well, it should be as easy as New Jersey. It took about a decade in New Jersey, to be honest, but the concerted effort to pass the law only took about 2 years. And I do think that New Yorkers are more skeptical than other lawmakers. So in New Jersey, we would go in, we would meet with lawmakers. They would have questions about how these laws have played out in other states, questions about the legislative language. We would answer them, and lawmakers would take a position. And then we were able to bring the bill to the floor and pass it. And we passed it with more support than we thought that we had. Here in New York, we're seeing lawmakers, if they're willing to talk about death and dying at all, which is a big hurdle.
Interesting. Can I ask if it splits equally in terms of party line?
Well, that is a very interesting question, because unfortunately, if you look at the list of bill sponsors, we don't have a single Republican on the bill. However, behind closed doors, I will tell you that there's a tremendous amount of support among Republican lawmakers. Republican lawmakers telling us that they want the option.
What's the stigma for them? Why are they saying it behind closed doors and not publicly?
I think, David, we live in a hyper-partisan time, and there are some lines that you just don't cross no matter what.
But is it a religious reason? Is it we don't want assisted suicide to be permitted? Because there's several arguments that they use. We don't want relatives being taken advantage of. We don't want folks who are older and maybe depressed more naturally to then decide to take their own lives. Where do they fall? They use all those arguments or what?
You know, those are some arguments, and there are more. I would say that there are probably as many arguments that lawmakers have as there are lawmakers who remain opposed or on the fence. The Republicans don't fall into any of those categories very neatly. They tell us, not all of them, of course, but many of them tell us that they're sympathetic, that they're supportive, that they may even vote yes when the bill comes to the floor, and we'll see if that happens. But I don't think that they fall into any of these neat categories. A lot of it is just a personal discomfort with the idea of allowing people to die. And what I say to some of those folks, sometimes more bluntly than other times, is if you think it's uncomfortable to talk about death and dying, imagine what it's like to be a family member watching someone suffering terribly, begging for relief and not being able to do anything to help them take control of their own death. Think of how difficult it is to be dying and, despite the best care available, to still be suffering in excruciating pain. That's uncomfortable. And what we found is that lawmakers who have had an up-close and personal experience with death and dying, either with a loved one or a terminal diagnosis themselves, it becomes real very quickly. And they see that it's just untenable to maintain a position opposed to medical aid and dying in the face of that suffering.
We're speaking with Corinne Carey, Senior Campaign Director of Compassion and Choices for New York, and they are currently trying to get the Medical Aid and Dying Act passed in the New York State Legislature. The law itself, I imagine over these years, you've crafted in such a way to eliminate some of these obstacles, to suggest, for example, that this is going to be looked over by a doctor, there are rules in place so that it's safe, that it's done so that we know that it's not something to do with the mental health of the person who's seeking it, right? So you're really making that very specific to make it harder for lawmakers to not support.
It's true. The bill is modeled after Oregon's law, for sure. The core eligibility guidelines in Oregon: one, that you need to be terminally ill; two, that you need to have a 6-month prognosis; three, that you need to be mentally capable; and four, that you need to be able to self-ingest the medication, have remained unchanged for more than a quarter of a century. Think about that, David. When a state passes a law that's new, normally it needs to be tweaked and fixed and the problems need to be worked out. But Oregon's model, because of how carefully it was crafted, works. And that's why every state that's followed has used the same core eligibility guidelines. Now, in New York, we've amended the bill several times to make it consistent with other areas of New York law to address some of the concerns that some lawmakers have to shore up some of the safeguards.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah, just one that would require the doctor to inform a terminally ill patient of all of their end-of-life options, including hospice, palliative care, and any other viable treatment options. You know, we have the lowest rate of hospice utilization among those who are eligible of any state. We rank last in the nation. That's absurd. We are a state that's dedicated to quality care, and here we have care that is paid for by Medicare that very few people take advantage of. This law will actually open up the conversation, lead more doctors to understand better what the benefits of hospice are, refer more people to hospice, and then have more people enrolling in hospice. That's just one of the side effects that these laws have had in states that have adopted it.
That's Corinne Carey, Senior Campaign Director for Compassion and Choices. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Poughkeepsie Mayor Yvonne Flowers is fresh from a trip to Washington, D.C. last week to attend President Biden's State of the Union address. Flowers, a Democrat, was a guest of Democratic Congressman Pat Ryan, and she also got the chance to meet with multiple representatives for advice on issues in the city. Flowers tells the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King she was pleasantly surprised by the president's speech.
When he brought up about more funding going into the bipartisan infrastructure law, so that way it can continue on with the goal of helping municipalities replace their lead service lines. Everyone pretty much cheered on that. They were happy that was happening. Then also, too, that he mentioned about the fighting against the gun violence. And so there's a few representatives that were really focused on that, including the representative that I met, Lucy McBath, and I believe she's from Georgia. And so her main focus was passing legislations to deal with gun violence and then also finding funding and implementing programs for gun violence prevention programs. And then, of course, you know, there were some things that came forward in regards to taking care of the needs of the middle class families. He mentioned about the federal taxes being lower for working class families. And, you know, of course, he said he's going to tax the rich. So, you know, everybody kind of clapped on that. Of course, some were not too happy with. So whether that's something he can do, that's another story. But that was something that was that I was excited to hear him talk about that, but also how it relates to providing more opportunities for municipalities to expand their housing, especially for the middle class. You know, I said, oh, wait a minute, we have to really start, you know, tapping into that even more to make sure as we're building our housing stock, especially for the middle class, that we see what programs are available and what fundings are available on a federal level to help us with that.
You mentioned that you got to speak with Georgia Representative Lucy McBath. What exactly did you guys talk about? And was there anyone else in Washington, too, that you were able to meet up with?
She was explaining to me some of the work that she did with an organization called Mothers Demand Action. And that's where she started working with after her son Jordan was killed. So she said that they were very effective in helping pass certain legislation to help with the gun violence. And then she told me to think about reaching out to them. And they have local chapters throughout the country to talk with them about some things that they're working on now, especially in our particular area. She also suggested that I reach out to get more involved with Mayors Against Illegal Guns. And that there's also some, you know, initiatives that are out there that I might want to participate in or look into in doing in the city of Poughkeepsie. So what she mentioned is that, and for us, we can look at how we can bring in some of that funding to help our SNUG program. Because our SNUG program is the ones that are out there, you know, working with our youth that are getting involved in gun violence. So just finding ways too to how we can help that organization and then deal with other youth organizations that are doing, working on activities that help with the gun violence, how we can get additional funding for them as municipalities working on a federal level. I also met with Ryan Lehman, who is the director of outreach and member services, but he's part of the transportation and infrastructure committee. So I was able to have a conversation with him that explains a little bit more about funding that's coming forward that the city can apply for and the resources that are out there that can help municipalities get through that application process. And so, of course, he asked me what are some of the things that I want to see in Poughkeepsie, especially when it comes to housing. And for us, what that committee can help with grant funding that's going to help with the infrastructure that we need that can sustain the increased housing units that we're planning on having going forward. You know, because some people just look at it just building, you know, buildings, you know, with all these different units. But you also have to make sure that you have a water and sewer that can accommodate that as well. You know, and our infrastructure here is a little old, so we need to make some improvements, especially when we're starting to build more in certain areas where we're already seeing deterioration happening.
Well, any other thoughts on Biden's address? You know, was there anything that maybe didn't click as much with you or anything that you particularly took away from his speech?
Not really. I was just surprised that when I heard him speak before, he seemed a little frail and he seemed, you know, a little off balance when I first went to Washington in January. But when I saw him last week and when he walked into the room, just to see the confidence and he was ready to deliver that powerful speech, you know, I was impressed with that. And then to hear him speak for that length of time, because it went on for about an hour, I was really impressed. He did much better than I thought he would do. So I walked out feeling much more confident that, you know, about him being able to lead this country for another 4 years.
Poughkeepsie Mayor Yvonne Flowers speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The North Country Chamber recently hosted the region's representatives in Albany for an update on activities and expectations at the New York State Capitol. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
Business and community leaders gathered for the annual legislative breakfast, which came after Governor Kathy Hochul submitted her executive budget and the Senate and Assembly chambers were working on their versions of the state budget. State Senator Dan Steck, a Republican from the 45th District, launched into a description of the budget process.
The Assembly and Senate One House budget resolutions will be prepared. And then basically the remainder will be what's been known as three people in a room, back and forth negotiation to try to take those three plans and meld them into one. And hopefully with a little effort, we will deliver an on-time budget. Last year we were about a month late. I think this is going to be a challenging budget year. And a lot of this is related to the post-COVID hangover that, you know, I think is just lingering over the entire country. That spigot has been turned off. Every state government handled that a little differently, and I think New York handled it where there was like an expectation or an anticipation that this money would continue to flow. That reality is setting in now, and so now you're seeing a reaction to that.
Steck says what's most concerning across the district is the governor's proposed changes to education foundation aid.
Roughly half of the upstate school districts would see less money in that formula. Whether or not the formula should be changed or not, that's a worthy conversation to have. The way the governor did it is she decided to go absolutely cold turkey. We're going to make this change all at once. And again, it would be about a reduction for about half of the school districts. I've got 48 school districts in my Senate district, and exactly 24 of them would see less money under her proposal. I don't expect that to be the final where we land. But, you know, anytime an idea is on the table, you have to react to it and you have to be concerned about it.
Assemblyman D. Billy Jones, the Democrat representing the 115th District, says he is confident both chambers can make up any education cuts. He also said health care costs need to be addressed.
Our hospitals need support. They need help. We see the rising cost of not only health care staffing. We need to get more and proper Medicaid reimbursement for them. Housing as well. Housing's a huge issue. It took up a lot of the oxygen in the room last year. The governor came out with 5 to 7 major initiatives that she wanted to see. She didn't get very many of those initiatives through. So I think she's really going to push on that this year. And as Dan had said, I don't think it's going to be an easy budget year. There's nothing that really sticks out, but housing, believe me, is a major issue.
Jones noted that the North Country region is keeping an eye on the fiscal status of the Metropolitan Transit Authority.
The MTA is a big job creator here in the North Country. We make buses, we make transportation, and so that's very important to us. Also, working on the Canadian New York partnership. I'm the task force chair for New York Canada Task Force Relations. We had great talks about critical minerals and energy and very important infrastructure projects that we have from our friends and neighbors to the north. We can never forget about that relationship and how important it is to this region.
A businessman asked about the lack of child care, noting it is impeding business development. Steck believes it's not just funding such services that needs to be addressed.
It's the regulatory burden to get that single person that says, I know how to take care of kids, I want to take care of kids, but they're not a business person, they're not a lawyer, they don't know how to get through all this. And one of the suggestions that had come up would be if there was funding, state funding for like an ombudsman or somebody that is an expert in the regulations, that their job is to bring the regulators together with the would-be provider, somebody that knows the system and can walk them through it. I thought that was a good idea.
The state budget is due April 1st.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The holy month of Ramadan is coming at a difficult time for Muslims everywhere. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas with more.
During the month of Ramadan, Muslims worldwide fast from sunrise to sundown. The timing of Ramadan is set by the lunar calendar. Imdad Imam, the president of the Al-Fatima Islamic Center in Colony, explains what the 30-day observance means.
Our holy book of Quran, it describes as one of the essentials Muslims have to perform. Like we have to pray 5 times a day. That's a must. Similarly, we have to fast 29 or 30 days in the holy month of Ramadan. This is also a must. Like we have to go to Hajj, Mecca, once in our lifetime, if you can afford it. That's a must.
So similarly, the holy month of Ramadan is coming at a difficult time
for
Muslims.
What we do in this month is basically we have to fast around about an hour before sunrise. And then at sunset, few minutes after sunset, we can drink and eat. So it's, 14 hours or 16 hours of fasting, depending upon the area you are in.
Imam says the 9th month of the Islamic lunar calendar is a time for prayer and reflection to avoid quarrels and conflict and perform acts of charity.
You should not quarrel with others. You should not backbite. You should not hurt anybody. All of these things, either eating or drinking or doing all of these other things, will break your fast.
Imam says Muslims are mindful of the conflict thousands of miles away in Gaza, the war that started with October 7th Hamas attacks on Israel, which responded with a devastating campaign of its own.
First of all the Muslims are even non-Muslims. They are thinking about Gazans because, you know, they are being bombarded. They are fasting. They will be fasting either today or tomorrow. And they don't have food. They don't have shelter. So obviously people are saddened a little bit. I'm not going to get into the politics of it, but yes, it does affect everyone, especially Muslims.
Hamza is an education consultant and assistant imam in the Albany area.
Our society has been so materialistic, we forget that we have an interior, internal, you know, manifestation and dimension. But this year is especially tough because we see our brothers in faith and in humanity suffering to such a degree which they themselves don't have food, and children are dying of starvation like we have never seen before. So when we fast today and for the next 29 or 30 days, the fast will be very, very heavy on our conscience and our souls.
Imam urges local Muslim community members to empathize with the Palestinians in need.
The minimum you have to do is feel bad, sad about it. Then you pray to Almighty God that this conflict is over. And the third thing is you should say something from your tongue, and this is a demonstration. And I would say the last thing we should do is give some charity for them.
Hamza says the observance is also about inner growth.
We work very, very hard to achieve material wealth, status, but what about the inner workings? Compassion, love, mercy, justice, honesty. What about those things? If we focus on those things, the world will change for a much better place and a much safer place for all of us.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York State Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2411 and join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.